doing this interview in the back of this Rolls Royce. So it's a very cool production, kind of like a podcast kind of thing, kind of like what we're doing now, but you're driving around a Rolls Royce that sounds great until you need to get sound. And so I came up there and I was like, yeah, sure, I can do this. And then he handed me like 3 GoPros, a Zoom, and was like, bye.
Okay, welcome to Filmmaking Framed, the video podcast interviewing industry professionals to find out the tips and tricks to make it behind the silver screen. As always, I co-host Tom Dexter and myself, Daniel Hughes.
Hello. Today we are with a camera operator working across films, across video games, VFX, reference cameraing, that sort of thing. So Sam, let's start off with our first question. Please describe your role to an audience and assume they don't know anything.
Yeah, so I'm a camera operator, which means that I operate a camera.
Applause.
Yeah, right. Sometimes I might supply my own equipment, which is often expected for some roles, for example, like city camming. And other roles, the studio might supply something for, like, if I'm doing reference camera. It's a huge, broad spectrum, and definitely camera operating in itself can take you to many different areas. Like, one moment you might be in a really comfortable studio, your lunch always arrives on time, there's breakfast, it's fantastic. Another time you're like out in the middle of nowhere in a country that you don't really know particularly well, and it's wet, everything's muddy, you don't know how to get the AD's attention, and everything's going wrong, and then you're back in a studio again, or maybe like an arena or filming sports. Sometimes you're doing a whole lot of exercise and you're running about and you're carrying lugging equipment, and other times it's fairly relaxed and it's fairly organized and you have lots of assistants to help you out. So it's a huge like spectrum of different experiences that you can definitely have as a camera operator.
And how do you decide which job to take? Do you go, I really fancy standing in a cold, muddy field next week? Or it's just kind of what work comes in. How do you sort of decide on what jobs you take?
Obviously, I have a really good system to decide what work I have and when to book it. So I look at my calendar, and if there's nothing there, I say yes. And I just hope that nothing else also pops up on the same day.
That's a great system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one adopted by many people in the industry, I can promise you. So how did you get into the industry? How did you hear about it? When did you know you wanted to do it?
I first kind of like fell in love with cameras at a very young age because my mum was a photographer for architectural buildings. Mm-hmm. And she was a freelancer. And so I was always around like cameras and lights and all those kind of stuff. And so I kind of picked it up. And then when I went to school, I found that I was enjoyed anything with a camera, really. Mm-hmm. And those were the classes that I also got better marks in. So I kept on doing them and I could focus on. So really when I was like sort of GCSEs kind of time, I always went with like photography and media studies.
Yep.
Turns out media studies is a huge spectrum. And so when you first go there, you're like, oh, sweet, we're going to be playing with cameras. We're going to do editing. We're going to be making films. And then you just studying like the way of film from like the 1920s, and you're like, this isn't quite exactly what I had in mind.
Cover things like advertising, yeah, and marketing as well, and those sort of things.
Yeah, like making magazines and stuff like that. And you're like, this isn't what I expected.
This is specialized enough.
Yeah, exactly. And so I went through school. I got pretty good marks because I basically dropped every other subject, especially in A level, and I just focus on photography and media studies. Mm. Because I had a plan, and my plan was to do foundation because I was the last year in the UK that I could get foundation for free. So
okay,
kind of had to do it.
Explain to someone who doesn't know what that is.
So foundation is like just a very broad, well, it's meant to be a broad spectrum of like different subjects that you might have interest in, but you're not quite sure if you really want to go into like 3 or 4 years studying and putting a lot of money for something that you might not actually like.
Yeah.
And also gets you used to like university life. And so I went to Bournemouth University.
Nice town.
Yeah. It was a very nice place. I actually loved Bournemouth. Bit small. Love, like, I never had a place that had so many old people, but also so many drug dealers at the same time.
And that prepared you for film.
Exactly. And I saw seeing all the ADs be like, I know exactly what you like.
So the foundation course, is it kind of like the American system, which in the American system, you don't pick your major straight away. So you study a bunch of different things and then you go, oh, this is what I'm going to focus on and this is what I'm going to qualify in. So when you were doing that foundation course, was there a moment where you had to go, yep, I want to carry this on? Or, yep, I want to change direction, or I want to drop out. Is that?
Yeah. Well, lucky for me, Bournemouth University had a course that was perfect for me because it was a course called Foundation Lens-Based Media, which was just photography and film. Mm. So it happened to be the only two subjects that I took in GCSE, not GCSE A-levels.
Yeah. And it happened to be what you wanted media studies to be.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a lot of like experimentation. It was very like, it was an arts university. Mm. It wasn't quite like the big productions and like regimented schedule that the actual film industry is like. But it got me a good like understanding. And so I ended up going towards the film side, mostly because film is just so much more collaborative than photography. Because I did a few like photo shoots and I assisted on a few photo shoots as well. And what I really found was that there's the photographer and then there's like the assistants. Obviously, there's lots of different like assistants and different hierarchies in that. Yeah. But what I liked about film was that there was many different types of heads that you could be. Like there's the cinematographer, the producer, the director, the editor, and all the people, and they have like equal weight in the industry.
Mm.
It's not just like, oh, I'm assisting for photography.
Yeah.
It's like, this is like my department. This is everything that I like careful.
Yeah.
Did you discuss with your mom at that stage if she'd gone down the photography route for the architecture and that sort of thing? Did you discuss with her about whether you wanted to do photography or film, or you just knew and she was totally down with that?
I don't really know, honestly. I mean, like, obviously talked a lot about photography because I was studying it for like years in school, and I was also assisting her sometimes on shoots and stuff like that. And she definitely helped a lot in that and was able to talk me through like cameras and stuff like that. She wasn't too knowledgeable about the actual videography and the video side of stuff, but it kind of translates over, especially thanks to the 5D Mark II. What an amazing camera. Wow. When that bad boy came out, like all your like photography and like videography needs, they were set. They were done. What an amazing camera. Came out in a perfect time, especially for me. And you could mean that I could do two things at once with one kit. Incredible. And now it's just the norm. Like, try getting like a DSLR that doesn't film.
Yeah.
I had, just before we go further down the road of the life of Sam into where you are now, I'd be interested that some of the younger listeners who are maybe at that A-level stage or GCSE stage who want to end up where you are or in the industry, would you say that media studies was worth doing retrospectively? Or would you say that you think that you wish you'd done something else to get to this point?
I say like it is worth it, much because there's no other option really. It does get you out there. It does make you understand the different roles in media. It's just the issue is that it's so broad. It's kind of like art in a sense. Like if you study just art, like that could be anything.
Yeah.
And that's the same issue with media is that, oh, I want to be a filmmaker, but you also have to study now advertisement and magazines and all that kind of stuff. I almost say that better way to get into it is really not really focusing too much on like what your school can provide, but more that what you can provide. So going out with your friends and making a short film, like you're going to learn far more from just messing around with the camera, editing it, putting in the credits, realizing, maybe I shouldn't credit myself like 10 times. It looks kind of weird. And you learn far more just from doing that than actually like in class I'm like, obviously when you hit like university and college and stuff like that, it changes drastically. I mean, there might be some better courses out there, especially if you're going for like the college route. Because I did my A-levels like 8 years ago. I don't know. I don't know how long ago that was, but it was a while. I'm like calculating how old I am now. Oh my God.
24, right?
Yeah.
Not, let's not dwell.
I thought I've got a somber feeling.
So what was your first paid job in the industry?
My first paid job.
Or it could be the first one of your first jobs that jumps out to you.
Yeah.
So when you were still in the establishing your name phase.
Yeah, that is hard because quite a lot of like the first jobs you get, you're very happy to just be like, yes, I will do that. I will do that for the experience.
Yeah.
And then you get screwed. I think one of the first things that really sticks out to me about when I was filming, just starting out my career, I was still sort of doing it for free and doing it off my own back and just like contacting like family, friends and stuff like that. I got in contact with someone who would like needed some help filming, doing this interview in the back of this Rolls Royce. So it's a very cool production, kind of like a podcast kind of thing, kind of like what we're doing now, but you're driving around a Rolls Royce that sounds great until you need to get sound. And so I came up there and I was like, yeah, sure, I can do this. And then he handed me like 3 GoPros, a Zoom, and was like, bye, and just left me. I was like, I don't know how old I was, 17? I didn't know what I was doing. I recorded everything. The sound got a bit messed up. It went on far later that stuff. We didn't have any lights. I was in charge of getting equipment. And so that really steps out to me that some things are best just to say no, especially if you're just going for experience. I mean, like, it also in itself, it was a good experience to be like, oh, yeah, no, I shouldn't be doing stuff like this, that I should look more into it, making sure that there's, and makes you realize why there are multiple people in the industry and whether multiple separate jobs. Like, if I had a sound guy with me, just any kind of sound recorders, or just someone that's just looking out for the sound, it would have been infinitely better if I just focusing just so I could just focus just on the camera. And I find that quite a lot, actually, when you're saying this starting off a film, people just sort of sneak sound in there because it's such an afterthought. It's a reason it's a huge department. It is so hard because you can't see it. At least with cameras, you can be like, that's recording. I see what the image is. But with sound, it's like, I can't see that.
Yeah. In my experience on sets, crews are rarely louder than when there is a request for room tone. Because it's, you know, you shoot the scene and everyone's got to be quiet because they're rolling and the ADs will start shouting if you don't. And then they're like, cool, we've got that scene, moving on. And the sound will be like, room tone. And everyone who's been waiting to move their equipment is like, anyway. Yeah. I'm amazed their sound are so friendly considering how hard their jobs are.
Yeah.
And famously, they say that a beautifully shot film with awful sound is worse than a bit of a shoddily shot film with beautiful sound.
Yeah, because it's artistic, you know? It's like, oh, we use it like a crappy camera and the image is all off. It's like, that's our artistic choice. Mm. We decided to go for this very cheap like camcorder look, not because it was the only camera we could afford, but because it gave that ambience, that look they were going for.
Mise en scène.
Yeah, exactly. But you can't be like, yeah, we called it on the phone because we just felt it was better. Like, just the sound.
Yeah. So going back a bit then, so you finished your course at Bournemouth.
Yep.
How soon after that did you start working in an industry, or what were your next steps immediately from graduating?
After that, I took a year off. I just tried to look for work in the industry. That's when I did the job in the back of the Rolls Royce. And looking for other things, I did like small like videography stuff. I didn't really go into any big film sets. I assisted at least on a promotion video for the Coldstream Guards for the military branch. That was very cool. That was very cool. They were shooting blanks and everything. I still don't think I've been on anything like that kind of like level of like intensity before or like since, which is kind of sad. I'd love to be in something more like that. I mean, the first plan was to have like tanks and all that kind of stuff coming in, but that sort of fell through. So it was just them running around the field shooting blanks, which is still very fun. And I did some traveling. Just going around and really preparing myself for going for the next stage, because I knew where I was already going to go to a school in London. I went to that school not because like I really wanted to go to it, more because I knew I wanted to be in London because I wanted to be a filmmaker in this larger space. Otherwise, I would have just stayed in Bournemouth. But I knew that most of my contacts would have came from the course, which was right. Like if I stayed in Bournemouth, did my BA there, moved to London, I would have had no idea where I'm going to be starting.
It's one of the few things that there's always a strong argument either side about whether you should go into education for studying film or not. Mm. And like you said earlier about your media studies, it's about what you do outside of that education. So you go to a course and yes, you're learning some stuff and it will be, some will be useful, some won't. But the connections you make, you find other people who have the same drive as you or the same passion as you. And then you learn and build those connections. And then years later, those still come up.
Yeah, totally. Like, probably what you learn and what's actually in the course, if you just go there like day to day as if you're going to like a 9-to-5, you're probably only getting like 25% of the actual experience. The rest of the experience is meeting people, making those friends, making those connections. And it happens naturally, far more naturally than going to a, what are they called, those events that you like mingle.
Networking mixes.
Yes.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speed dating for jobs.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, they're so awkward.
I forgot to ask, where were you from originally? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Wiltshire on the border, so Wiltshire, Berkshire, near Hungerford, Newbury area.
So your choices were home, Bournemouth, or you go off to London and do this other course?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Bournemouth was still very far away from Wiltshire. I ended up going really to Bournemouth for the course. I didn't go to Bournemouth because I want to go to Bournemouth. I end up really liking Bournemouth just from sheer coincidence because it just ended up being a nice place. But it was very quiet, like very quiet. You can often hear a penny drop in that town. Apart from at night, which when all the students, funny, came out from their student accommodations.
Yeah.
their grubby halls.
So what was the course that you studied in London? What was the title of it?
It was a two-year BA intensive course. So we went through the summer, which was actually really nice. And it was a practical filmmaking. So the idea was that you go there, they teach you like the practical aspects of it. And so you can go straight from there onto set. Nice idea. There's a lot of other places that actually do very similar things, mm-hmm. Especially in London. But it was really just to like cement myself in London and get those contacts in London and finding people, especially people that wanted to be practical in film, was also a big thing for me. Because I knew if I went to this course that was targeting people that want to be like working in the industry and going for it, you won't be finding the people that didn't really want to be there. Those people were still there, surprisingly.
Amazing, yeah.
It is incredible. The amount of people that you make friends with in like film courses that then just didn't go off and do film. Mm. They then find, you know, actual happiness in life.
Their partners know what they look like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose, well, I remember when I was much younger that a lot of my peers were trying to decide whether to do university courses and stuff in film. And that is something to consider, is how practical the course is. And if that's what you're interested in, then that's what you need to look for. And sometimes they're very theoretical based, which might be fine if, you know, you want to go into curating or archiving or into film
analysis.
Programming, analysis, that sort of thing. In which case, theoretical courses are fantastic. But if you are wanting to get on set and work with a camera or any other department, then definitely look for those practical courses. Mm. Have you...
And a question I'd advise students to ask when they're going to call up is, you know, what kit would I be able to just rent out and go and shoot stuff with? So I know from Tom's experience, that's something he has done a lot. And I'm imagining you will have done the same on all your courses. And then you go out and shoot stuff with your friends.
Yeah. The equipment is always good. I'm trying to think of. I definitely should have looked more into the equipment when I first joined. But
that actually comes onto a good one of, if you were at the point where you're thinking they're going to go have value of go and get a course, and you were going to do some research now, what are the things that you're like, so for example, the media course, you were like, oh, this is way broader than just the practical elements. Like, what kind of stuff would you use to filter if you could, if you were born again and you were that age and you were looking for a uni course to go for? That was a terribly worded question, but we'll ignore that.
You know, I'm trying to think if... I think also reputation is very important because most of that comes from people's experience. Try to see if there's some reviews about it as well. And if you're... It's hard because most of the good courses that you find are what people talk about on set. And you didn't really go on set until you've done some of the courses.
Very chicken and eggy.
Yeah, it is. Maybe if I was starting all over again, I would try my best to get onto productions by being like a runner or something, just starting out. And then going up to the people in the on doing the jobs that you kind of see yourself doing. Yep. And just ask them how they kind of got there. And what courses they did, even if they did a course. Quite a lot of people didn't. Quite a lot of people actually went. If I was starting again, I probably would have gone down the route of just going straight into a rental house, which is what I end up doing anyway after
that. BA. That's a great shout. Really good way to learn the kit. And I assume, not having done it, meet the people who are coming in to rent the kit and then going, I'm free on weekends. Or what hours do you tend to work in a rental house?
Yeah, it's like 9 to 5.
Monday to Friday, so you've got the weekend to...
Yeah, I mean, they might ask you back and then you get obviously extra pay for being there for the weekend.
Yeah.
My experience is that they're pretty flexible. Obviously, like, turn up every day, Monday, Friday, 9 to 5, often a little bit early. Get ready to make a little teas. Make sure your coffee game's good.
Surprisingly valuable.
Yeah, it is, like, just through life.
And in that vein, not to endorse smoking, but I have had bosses who were massive smokers who we've been filming on set at 2 a.m. and I carried a packet when I was a junior and I would offer them one and they'd be like, you're a lifesaver, I'm going to take you on the next job. And I'm like, I'm glad you will, but I wish that it was also on my practical skills. But, you know,
that is genius. That is a good lesson for anyone who wants to come into the industry. Play on their addictions.
It is. And another boss, phone was always dead. Bought 5 battery packs. He was like, oh my God, Daniel, I can't imagine doing a job without you. My phone's always dying. And you're like, yeah, of course. Definitely hire me for this.
Yeah.
Like, how many of those battery packs did you lose?
No comment, Your Honor. Yeah, that's a good short way to put it. Play on your boss's addictions and they will hire you more.
But it also goes into that wider thing of be useful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make their life as easy as you can so that they're like, I just want to get Sam in because Sam just makes it.
Especially because at the start, you don't have the technical abilities to compete on. But if you can make, and having a good sense of humor, being optimistic, being smiley, if you can lift the team morale, that's valuable because you'll make people with technical skills better at their jobs. So you compensate for your lack of learning at that point. Which is why when you become good, you can become grumpy.
That is a truth we've just hit on.
If you could go back and give piece of advice to your younger self, whether it was from you, from your experience, or if you wish someone had given it to you, what would that have been?
It'll probably just be just keep going. Like, the industry is just a hard place to get into, and it's all about just being there at the right time and just not giving up, just like getting ready to hunker down and knowing that this is what you want to do. And also understand that there's going to be points in the year that for some reason you're just not going to get work. And you're just going to have to find a way of surviving through that. And also getting like a part-time job somewhere else, sometimes not connected to the film industry. That's okay. Okay to just work in a cafe for like on the weekends or every other day, you know, and then let them know that you can't make it because you're doing a film thing.
And it feels like it's really important to get part-time jobs that offer you maximum flexibility.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah. That's why I often go for like cafes or some pubs and stuff like that, and being straightforward with them, saying, by the way, I am in film, and so I won't be able to commit 100% to this job. This is what I'm looking for, like a part-time or a 0-hour contract, just something they can just keep you going, can like pay like most of the rent if hopefully all of it, if you just haven't got any work that month at all, and just know that it's like, it's okay. Like some people might be further ahead of you at like coming straight out of university, and it's okay. Like don't get stressed out about it.
And some people have advantages you won't. I mean, even putting aside parents in the industry or family, friends, or just there'll be people who their parents live in London, so they can live with their parents while they're establishing themselves. And that means you might have to do work outside the industry to pay your bills, but you can build a name and then you can earn really good money once you're in.
Yeah. Yeah. Also just like keep being happy that you're there, really. Don't, even if you're miserable, don't let people know that you're like upset. Like go like cry on the Luton for a little bit. It's okay.
Sometimes you have to schedule that time.
Yeah. You do have to schedule that time, unfortunately.
Just got the radio. I'm going 10-1, which means going to the toilet.
Yeah.
10-1, but you're out. You're going for a cry.
Yeah.
Do you think that, like you say about always staying positive, obviously it can be really hard when you're doing crazy hours, and how have you found working with other people? Do you find there are certain people that, I don't know if this is even a question, but what are the character traits you see in people that make that so much harder to be around?
Oh, people that stress out. People that make like tiny little things and just blow out of proportion. Especially people that are not even like higher ups from you. People that are like on the same level as you. And they're like freaking out, or they're like even getting like angry because of it. And it's just like, whoa, calm down. So that's what I often do to like either like de-stress or make someone else de-stress, especially if they made a mistake or something like that, is just remind them that we're making films. We're not saving lives. We're not doctors. We're not forming people's, like, we're not changing the course of history here. We're making a movie. Yeah. And the most important thing is that people are, like, safe, and that we just can just carry on doing this. If we don't get all the shots, if something messes up, it's, like, it's okay. No one's, like, died. No one's injured. We can all go back home. Yeah.
I can't stress enough how right you are on that. And every top class professional that I've ever worked with across departments has expressed that to me at some point. And it just feels like it will take you time because it's cinema and it's magic and there's actors and there's this. But like when you know you've really settled into your craft, when you can go, this matters. I will give this a lot of time. I'll give this a lot of focus, a lot of attention, a lot of stress. But it is only film and TV. And when you can still be excited, but go, you know, if we're going to run over or we have to come back to get this shot, or, you know, the coverage wasn't great or whatever, it is not, as long as no one's hurt, as long as no one's injured, it's not worth sacrificing your happiness over those kind of stresses.
Or health.
Or health.
Yeah. Even if you are stressed, just like, don't show it as much. It's quite easy to not show that you're stressed by just your body language. Don't put your hand like on your head when you're asking for something. Don't like, don't do like big like intakes of air. Just like talk to people calmly. Like if someone's like messed up, just like, yeah, let them know, but don't be like, oh, like they've just like crashed your car, because they haven't. They've like maybe ruined a shot.
Yeah, yeah.
And I suppose in that vein, don't take things so personally. Just be like, yeah, okay, that's happened. You didn't, like, presumably they didn't do it to ruin the shot. They didn't do it to make your job harder. They're doing it because they're trying to do a good job and they're trying to make a good film. So just be like, okay, what do I do next? What's the next step? Not, oh my God, and just focus on what's happened. Go, okay, that's happened. The Jenny's blown. We've lost all the power to lights. Okay, what's the next step? We need to get a new Jenny in. We need to check that the cables are all fine. Check the lights are fine. You know, communicate it to the ADs. And it's more about taking those practical steps. But I imagine it's, one of the reasons it's so hard is because, especially early in your career, you're so passionate about being there and wanting to do a good job that can become all-consuming.
Absolutely. And what I'd add is, and if you're the one who's mucked up and you're worried about people's reactions, tell them as quickly as possible. Because film tends to have a lot of people, a lot of money, a lot of years of experience. Almost everything is solvable, but it's very rarely, if ever, going to get easier to solve the longer it takes for anyone to know what it is. And the only cases where that's true is where the script changes and that this location fell through. It doesn't matter because you're not going to film there anymore. But that will happen once every blue moon. So on the whole, tell people straight away.
And then even then, when it is personally your fault and they attack you, don't take it personally. And that sounds really ridiculous, but the more you take things personally, the more ineffective you are.
Gordon Ramsay gave a great piece of advice for being a chef, which was take it professionally, don't take it personally. So when you screw up, it matters, but it matters professionally. It does not have a reflection on who you are as an individual and being able to separate those two selves.
I have a question for you, Sam. So that we can focus on camera operating, on that vein, has there been a moment in which you've screwed something up on set relating to camera, and what was the impact and how did you solve it?
Great.
You're just too perfect, Sam.
Most of them are like really small things that if you know kind of what you're doing, you can cover them up pretty quickly. I mean, like, there's a time I knew that I dropped a camera, but it was okay. It was an EX3. No one gave a fuck.
But it's good advice for a camera operator. Try not to drop the camera.
Yeah, don't drop the camera. Yeah. No, I was holding a tripod and the tripod was busted. Don't use broken equipment. That's a good one. If you notice that the equipment is faulty, don't use it. Don't try to like strong arm it or like continuing on with the day with this like broken equipment, especially if it's a tripod that's holding the camera. Like, let someone know. Ooh, actually, I think the biggest mess up I've had was it was quite a tricky one. So it was during a McLaren kind of like interview/advert. It was like an inside look at McLaren. So we're at McLaren. We had, I believe it was...
gorgeous facility, right?
Yeah. We were walking through this huge, awesome place. Yeah. And we had our interviewer and Lando Norris. Was he with McLaren or is it someone else? I feel like I need to quickly search this up to make sure that... Yeah, I was trying. Anyway... So yeah, we're walking through the facility and we're filming. Lando Norris was with us and someone else was interviewing them. We had these filters in, which are like black Promos filters to make it look all nice and shiny. And we had two Steadicam operators. So I was one of them and someone else was operating the other one. Obviously, couldn't do both. I'm not that good. And an issue occurred was that because there was these huge windows and it was just that point of day that the sun was shining through. It was coming through the windows, which looked really nice, up until you need to point towards the sun, in which case the filters was getting huge amount of flare in them. That was pretty much useless. And the issue is that I had the camera on me, and so I couldn't really reach for it. And so I had to basically like move towards the AC, which was really hard to do because there's only one AC for two cameras. And then they were able to pull out the filter. But the issue is that we had like, I don't know, maybe like a couple of minutes of film or footage there that I was just trying to avoid this light, which meant I was getting a worse shot, or a less desirable shot than I would have actually preferred to get.
What do you think that you could have done prior to that situation to have avoided that? Or is it just one of those things, the sun came through at a particular angle you couldn't have predicted?
I could have actually easily avoided that by going more around the areas, pointing it at our windows and just making sure there weren't any reflections. I mean, the filter wasn't even doing a lot, honestly. Like it was just sort of a bad idea anyway, having it in there. But I was like second camera for that, so I was like kind of less important.
Whose idea was it to have it in there? Just to get an idea of how these things are set up. Was it a director or a producer or a talent? Who was it who said, let's do that?
It was the producer, I believe.
Usually the producer's fault.
And
no comment, Euron.
I work as a producer, that's why. I joke
about. Yeah, I mean, it was to get like a better look. And because obviously the issue was that both cameras had them in, and so if one of them came out, then one camera looks a little bit different from the other. Really, I should have been faster. I should have just pulled it out. The other issue is that for those that's worked with Steadicam, putting off the balance even by that much, especially since it was a 4x4 filter with a whole filter tray, just whipping that filter tray out messed with the balance, and so it did become harder for me to operate, which was the other issue why I didn't really want to take it out, because I knew it was going to make my job harder to do. But looking back of it, as soon as I saw that, I should have just pulled it back, knew that there was going to be someone else that they could have cut to, pull that filter out, and then try to hand it to the AC and just got someone's attention faster than trying to work the shot with this thing, which just didn't really work out.
So one thing that Danny and I realized prepping for this interview, as we don't work in camera, we only have a vague understanding of all the different roles and all the different departments and exactly what they do. So assuming that some people out there are listening to this because they love film but aren't necessarily camera people, would you be able to quickly go through what a first AC is, what a second AC is, what's a clapper loader, and just very quickly what all the different roles are in your department and how you rise up through them?
Yeah, so AC stands for assistant camera or camera assistant. And so there's often three types of people that are assisting in camera. So there's the trainee, which is just being brought in, that often helps just the small menial tasks, often getting like teas and also like cleaning out kit and carrying kit, maybe driving some of the vehicles, and that's really about it. They're mostly there to learn, but they're often often given far too much to do. They're often setting up monitors as well. It's a very key thing that a trainee does, mostly getting themselves associated with like BNC cables, because you'll be working with BNC cables a lot if you're a trainee.
What are BNC cables?
So BNC cables, SDI cables. So they're like, imagine HDMI cables, but on steroids. They're like the industry standard cables. They lock in, they're great to use. And if they break, they're very easy to fix. Learning to fix them as well is actually a good trait to have. Because it's not too hard, but it is quite valuable. The task to do. Yeah. The second AC, otherwise known as a clapper, or also sometimes known as the loader as well.
Usually, but if you work in film, the actual film itself.
Rather than digital.
Yes.
Yeah. But so the second AC, your job is to often carry the cards. You might sometimes give that to the trainee, depending how far the DRT has decided to set the van up.
And DRT being digital imaging technician.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Someone that just gets...
Or as they're known for locations people, the guy who's still on location after everyone's left and you can't lock up.
They are there a lot. Also the ones that seem to be get always forgotten about production. When you're always like planning something, someone always forgets that the DIT needs to stay there for another 2 hours because everyone would just want to go, let's just keep going. Yep. Oh, can I run this car to the DIT? No time. We'll do that all at the end of the day. And it's like, great, now the DRT...
Now the DRT's sitting there for 4 hours.
Yeah.
And the DRT's backing everything up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Backing everything up. Sometimes they might also be doing testing out the picture as well. So they're just trying out like some color tests and stuff like that. And they might also be linking the sound audio with the visuals.
So sound also providing all their files to DRT.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just one whole big clump, and then their job is to then separate them onto multiple different hard drives. And so there's one for like basically almost like everyone. So one for the producer, one for the director, one for the DRT, and then one for safety. It's often how it goes. There might also be another one. There might also be like a huge just like motherboard that they're also keeping. There's a whole different kind of systems. And then anyway, going back to the ACs, the first AC is really like the leader of like the camera assistants. It's quite easy to see where the hierarchy is. Luckily, they just use numbers. Otherwise known as a focus puller. So their job is to pull focus on the camera. So they might have a wireless focus puller. So they have a small device that they can twist a little handle that then talks to a motor that they've set up onto the lens. That's a little gear head that's on cinema lenses. If you're just starting out, you wouldn't be using these lenses because they're just for like cinematography. They have gears along the sides, or you can, if you have a more like photography focused lenses, you can put gears on the sides of them and you can pull focus through that. So you can do that wirelessly, or you can go right up next to the camera and often have like the normal focus pulling system. And so their job is to make sure that the image is sharp. And then we have the camera operator who operates the camera. And then we'll have the cinematographer who then just talks to everyone below them. Some shoots often don't actually have a cinematographer at times. Often like the camera operator, often part-time as the DP.
DP being director of photography.
Yeah. Yeah. But it,
slash cinematographer.
It really depends.
Because the cinematographer is designing the shot, designing the lights, that sort of thing, working with the director directly. And so I guess sometimes you wouldn't have one because maybe it's a commercial or it's a sort of shoot where it doesn't have to look quite as artistic. Is that right? Or is that
yeah, so like, well, especially if it's like we're mostly using like the environment and sometimes the director might be more involved with that. Sometimes it's just harder to control. And so you don't really need like a DP. The DP is especially useful if you have like a larger team. And sometimes the DP is just the camera operator as well. So as a camera operator, I would often be asked my opinion on like framing and stuff like that. Sometimes also lighting as well. Mm. And so if we didn't have like a DP for that. And so if it's a smaller shoot, you don't exactly need someone that's dedicated for DP, especially someone that's dedicated for DP and a camera operator. They're often like one role.
Has every director of photography come up through camera operating, or can you come in as a director of photography not having worked in the camera?
Oh, yeah.
The other stages.
Yeah. No, a quite popular route is going from like art into DP. Into DP. Because you don't like having like basic knowledge about the camera equipment and lighting and rigging and all that kind of stuff is useful, but it's not needed. Because you have these amazing professionals around you all the time that can just do it for you. And you say like, oh, I really want some like a light coming from this way. And I want it like this color and I want it to feel like this. And you talk that to the gaffer and they're like, all right, yeah, we can make that work. We're going to put this up there and we're going to put like a big old sketch stand and you're going to use this light. And it's sort of like gives them what they want.
So is it more important for the cinematographer to have that artistic skill rather than the technical skill?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, as a DP, it's definitely more important than having that vision, especially because you're not the operator, you're the director. You're directing the photography of it. You're saying like, this is what I want this image to be, this is what I want it to say, this is what's important for me, this is what's important for the shot. And they're sort of keeping that in their mind for like, okay, what does the last shot have? What's the shot that's leading on from this? Making sure all is consistent, all is good. And so they're less like bogged down with like all the tactical stuff. Obviously, they'll pick it up as they go. But it's a huge like broad spectrum of like DPs. There's a lot of DPs out there that also camera operate and do all their own stuff, especially like on smaller shoots. But it's not exactly like a need.
So if you could surmise, just for anyone listening to this, so starting at camera trainee, what's the route up?
And like a rough average of how long it tends to take at each grade? How long is a piece of string question, but just as a ballpark.
Yeah, it really depends on like the person. Because some people just stick as trainees. Some people just really love just being a trainee. And they're like, I've been in this role for like 10, 15 years and just love being a trainee. But now it's getting a little bit harder to actually be a trainee now that most of these roles are... Crews themselves are getting smaller and smaller, especially as the technology is getting smaller and smaller, more advanced. You don't need as many people on set. But typically how it would go would be trainee. Let's say you might have gotten that job through running or knowing an AC or there might be an advert out there.
Are there any kind of Facebook or WhatsApp groups that you'd recommend camera enthusiasts join?
Yeah, there's quite a few sort of like people on set and just UK work and film. A lot of these groups, they sort of come and go though. And so it's quite hard to just pick one and be like, that I'm going to stick with this group and it's going to be work. It's going to be really active. And then all of a sudden, like it's completely dead. Instagram's also a good place. Like UK Film Works. Is UK Film Works? Or like UK, like working in film, something like that. And all these sort of places that advertise jobs, they often do it on their stories. So people put in their stories saying we need like a trainee or an AC or someone, and you can just flip through it on your phone. And so that's a good one. I've gotten a few jobs through there. And so that's a good place to try to start. And just...
Do you see that for the roles higher up, or do those roles tend to be a bit more you've worked at another level and people will just hire you that worked with you.
No, yeah, you still see them higher up. But I mean, they are very broad. Like, you could see one for UK film works and someone's like, hey, does anyone know anyone like Baghdad? It's like, no. I don't think I'm making that one.
My guy's working at the moment. Oh.
Yeah.
So it's camera trainee, second AC, first AC,
yeah,
operator,
DP.
Potentially DP if they're interested in going that route, or they just stay in that ecosystem.
Yeah. So it's like a trainee, you're just like learning the ropes, you're learning what everyone does until you get like enough confidence and you build up enough kit that you're like, okay, I'm ready for the next step. That could take 1 year, that could be 5 years. It really depends on until you feel that you are ready. It often what happens is that the industry says that you're ready and rent says that you're ready over than when you're ready. You see a job going, they'll be like, all right, we need a second AC. It's paying this much. Are you ready?
And you're offered it.
Yeah. You're like, I'm going to have to say yes. I'm going to see how this goes.
It's amazing how much that hamster wheel functions across departments.
Yeah.
Particularly when you're hired for a job and then someone senior goes onto a job and they like everyone gets moved up one place.
Yeah.
Especially during the boom of 2022, when it was so busy that they didn't have enough crew. So I suppose then people were just kind of jumping into all sorts of things. So if there's a really, like everything looks weird, but it probably doesn't. But from that period.
Yeah.
So just thinking on what you say about the crews getting smaller, where do you see camera operating going with the advent of AI or the industry in general? Is there...
And on that, have you seen Sora?
No.
So OpenAI, who created ChatGPT, have released a video about a coming product. It's not available to the public yet. It's called Sora, S-O-R-A. I recommend any listeners check it out. It's text to video, and it's amazing. Like,
really?
Tourists walking through, or people walking through Tokyo in the snow, looks pretty close to. So virtually all... or a significant amount of like establishers and GVs and so on would just get wiped by that. And so I was going to say, final point on that, Tyler Perry has actually just cancelled an $800 million construction project to build, I believe, 12 sound stages because he's gone. This is going to reduce the need to shoot on location.
You just basically horrified Sam. Yeah. Enjoying himself.
So, perspective. What's your prospects of surviving nuclear war?
Yeah, I didn't realize that AI already came that far. Because for me, AI video is still that short of Will Smith eating spaghetti.
Yeah.
Or it's just trying to get anyone to eat and like multiple fingers.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, yeah, everyone knew it's going to come to that sort of stage. I'm mostly trying to go more into the digital space anyway, because I do not just for like adverts and films and music videos and stuff like that, but I also do a lot of work in the digital space, as you know.
We hire Sam at a motion capture studio. So.
And I've also
shout out Centroid.
Yeah. And there's a huge like still market out there for like, it's the market's like shifting a lot, and I think being a camera operator as well is learning how to like go with it. Like, you either learn how to swim or you drown. Really, I mean, like, you can say how unfair it is that AI is taking people's jobs or how fast technology is going, but like, you know, it's just the way the world works. It's just how things happen. Yep. Like even like thousands of years ago, when people were making like stone tools. And then copper came along. There were stonemasons that were trying to emulate copper weapons, but with stone. And they're getting really, really good at it, but it was just...
Not as good.
Yeah, they're like, okay, we're going to try to make this. So they found like sort of stone, like swords and stuff like that, that look in the same style that people have been making copper items out of. So you can see where people in their fields of industry for like generations, for like millennia, has been like... This is an outrage. This is where I make my stand. This is the true.
I suppose camera people, though, I find tend to be quite with the times, as part of their role is keeping on top of how technology is developing, because you can't be like, right, I know how to operate this particular camera, because it could be outdated in 10 years' time.
Yeah.
So if you haven't gone with the flow of technology, people will hire people who have. So I suppose in that sense, would you say camera departments at least will have the right mindset or to kind of follow those changes?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, there will always be some people that need to cover the niche of, like, basically backpedaling. And because we're always, there will be someone that's wanting to do like a 16 millimeter film. Like, I've worked with 16 mil. I've actually soon about to go onto a set. I'm actually about to go from a motion capture set for 3 days where we're working completely in a digital space. And just like the height of like sort of technology and film at the moment to go onto a 16 mil set where I'm going to be loading 16 millimeter film. And so it's really like learning all the skills that you can and knowing that skills that you learn, especially in your field, are never going to be redundant. They're never going to be redundant. That's why I went off to learn how to do film, really just in case that something might come up that I need to learn film. And like I did, because I now got a few jobs loading film. But at the same time, I also need to know how to keep up with the times, the most recent technology, how to camera operate on a computer, which yeah. I've taught myself how to do. I've downloaded Unreal Engine and I can now camera operate inside a digital space.
Are there any courses, screen skills, Udemy, YouTube that you used when you were teaching yourself?
I just sort of like had a project in my, I found the best way to teach myself, especially stuff on the computer, is you have like a project in mind, being like, okay, if I wanted like a really short scene, I want like two people walking with each other and I need some camera movements, or even just like experimenting with it. Just type that in YouTube, like Unreal Engine camera operating, and then you just follow along with them. Luckily, Unreal Engine is completely free. It doesn't need to take that much computer power either. And you can teach yourself with that. Through film, going back, I went on a specific course for that. I went to NFTS for a year, learning how to AC their way. And I got taught like a lot of valuable skills through that. But the main reason I went there was so I can just load film and taking notes and film. Taking notes as an AC is really important, especially the second AC. Like, I say over half your job is like writing constantly. Every single shot needs to be in your notebook.
And what kind of form do those notes take?
So they'll take the form of like what the take is, state number. If you work on film, you need to put down how much feet of film that you've used for that take. And then anything else that's on there. So like what lens you're using. If there's any filters, what those filters are, and those kind of things. Maybe there might be extra stuff for VFX, so like how tall was the camera and what angle were you shooting at? And then you can transfer all those notes into a camera sheet report, which you very rarely use nowadays, especially in the digital era, but there's still some larger productions that still use them and they're very useful to have to make sure that you have everything, but especially using film. You definitely need all those notes because everything is physical.
In the digital era then, does that all get logged automatically? That the camera just tells the computer? Why?
I just feel that because the crews are getting smaller, people are less trained of knowing what note-taking is. But
presumably that information hasn't become less relevant, or has it, for the editor?
I can't really speak too much for all the editors, but all the editors that I know, they don't really work off camera sheets. I mean, like, it's always a good thing to have, but I don't know that many people that would be like, oh, we need camera sheets for this. I've only been on, I think, like, one other production that was, like, a professional production that we properly went into, like, using the camera sheets. I mean, it always depends on what the production is. If it's, like, if you're shooting for, like, 3 months, 4 months, you would 100% need camera sheets. Like, if it's, like, a full, like, feature film, you're going to need camera sheets. That is something you're definitely going to need. If it's like a commercial that's one day, probably not as much because the editor can kind of just all go through it.
Look at it all.
Exactly, yeah.
So who would read the camera sheets after they've been created?
The editor and the lab if they're using film. Maybe the director. And there's also a copy for the production as well for the producers. You really just get like one sheet, and then underneath that sheet is a whole lot of carbonated sheets. So they just copy on each other. So really you have like six sheets for all these other type of people. Also one for VFX and all that kind of stuff.
And is there a software that you guys use, or is all by hand?
All by hand.
Wow.
Honestly, there are very few film-based cam ops. Not cam ops, like operators, loaders and stuff. And it's a talent. Like, you find a really good one. Because you can very easily just over... a really bad one would just expose the film when you're using it. And
yeah, and you need like logs of all the stuff that you've had, because it's a physical thing.
You're using it up.
You're using up as well. Like, that's like the only copy. Like, you can't be like, okay, take it from the camera, from the card.
Copy save.
Copy saved like to multiple places. It's like, That's the only one. And until that goes to like the lab and is scanned, that is the only one. If that's misplaced somewhere with like, because it's not like, you know, you get like a hard drive for like a month worth of footage. It's like that big. Month worth of footage of film? To the floor?
Because wasn't there a thing about how long the film for Oppenheimer was if you laid it in a straight line?
Yes, it was like, I remember something like that.
I'm blanking now.
Fantastic. I think we'll start drawing this to a close. If people were interested in hiring you, Sam, What's the best way for them to reach you?
They can find me on Instagram as it's my name, Sam Losey Williams. I'm also on LinkedIn, same name. And those are probably the two top ways of finding me. There's also like my email, which you're honestly probably more likely to find me on Instagram and like Messenger and stuff like that. Mostly because my email, like everyone else, is constantly full of stuff.
Yeah. So we'll put some of these in our show notes if you're happy with that, and people can find you that way.
If I can be massively cheeky, I had one final question, which is, what do you think are the skills, traits, habits that make someone particularly suited to camera relative to the rest of the industry? So if you've got someone, they know they want to work on film and they'll hear this description and go, yeah, that aligns with me, I should take a look at camera.
Someone that's good at communicating. And also someone that loves just looking for a viewfinder. That is actually like a skill, just to be like looking and just sort of picturing stuff, how it will be through a lens. So like a good imagination. Organized. Good at withholding information. So not just like about the movement and about everyone else. It's good spatial awareness as well on top of that. But also, so information about like your kit that you're using, its limitations, and how far you can push it, and a good like vision for what you want something to look at the end, and not worrying about like someone that wants to like keep going, someone that can like push themselves, also like know themselves, know their body, so they don't get like injured. It's film is it's a marathon or a sprint.
Absolutely.
And being like also being friendly as well.
That's why we keep hiring Sam. Amazing. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you.